Hello and welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the podcast where each week I explore what it means to be a kick-ass and kind adult in our modern world. Expect strong language and viewpoints, as no topic is out of bounds here. My guests and I will navigate the complete spectrum from wildness to responsibility with compassion and curiosity rather than expectation. I'm Ebony Allard and I'm a misfit turned maven, an author, a coach and your host for Adulting with Ebony. Come on then, let's do this. Hello. So today I am joined by two of my very close friends, Nigel and Eloa Atkinson, who are a husband and wife team. They're co-authors of the groundbreaking book, Odd Man Out, Breaking the Vow of Male Silence, which is fantastic. And I have now finished it, you'll be pleased to know.
Thank you.
Amongst other pursuits, they coach individuals, couples and groups and facilitate workshops to support men around the world to understand more about themselves and women to understand more about men. Nigel and Eloa are known for their ability to shake up the status quo, their honesty and their playfulness, and we are going to have some fun today. Hello.
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 thank you for joining me. We always have so much fun when we hang out together. I can feel the giggles wanting to escape from
all. We're ready to go.
I'm ready to go. I can feel the giggles coming on already.
So I'm going to start with a question. What does being an adult mean to you?
What's that?
You go first, Nigel.
No, you first.
You go first.
No, you first.
After you. No. Being an adult means letting my husband go first. It's a very humble act. I'll go first. Okay, so the kind of eldest child in me wants to be very academic about this question and talk about emotional responsibility and there's a word that you use a lot, Ebony, sovereignty, being in a place of sovereignty in my life, being in a place of ownership in my life. I think that the more playful side of me wants to say that being an adult is about really fully owning all the different parts of me, especially those more playful and childlike parts, and being really daring to be really unapologetic in a world that's constantly telling us who to be. So there's my answer. Top that, Mr. Atkinson.
Okay. I heard you mention you're the eldest child. Well, I'm the youngest. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of the opposite. I find adulting quite difficult because I actually seem to prefer to be mothered and to be taken care of and sort of wrapped in cotton wool. I hate saying that, but it's really weird. I said to Elle just before we started, adulting, what does that mean? I didn't know what it meant.
What have you signed me up for?
I know. Elle gets me into these things, honestly. No, adult. Being an adult for me, I think as a man, is very much about taking responsibility for my thoughts and for my thoughts and my actions, and for being accountable and being the change that I want to see in the world.
I love that. I love that. I agree with both of you, by the way. And one of the reasons why I started this podcast is actually to navigate that spectrum between wildness and uninhibited nature and the kind of lack of responsibility right the way through to duty and responsibility. And one of the reasons for that is that they are like two of my core values. So much so I've got them like tattooed on my actual hands, right? Wild and truth.
I thought that said love and hate on your knuckles.
Nah, way more weird.
I didn't have my glasses on, you see. You wouldn't take the screen up to 150 for me.
So, yeah, it is a really interesting thing. Like, how do we know where to land on that spectrum? And I guess one of the things I wanted to talk to you guys about specifically around this is communication, because it's not always easy, and I know that you guys deal with kind of layers of it and are sometimes really good at it and sometimes not so much. So
thanks a lot.
God, have I just got myself into trouble?
No. It's the truth. It's all shit and sunshine. It really is.
Tell me about your kind of journey with communication. How have you learned? Have you done anything to help it? Is it just come naturally? Like, tell me more.
You're looking at me again. Do you see how we always look at each other? Like, who's going to go first?
Communication.
Well, I think it's really about learning to listen. I mean, to really listen and to really try and get under the skin of the person who's speaking, you know, to really want to understand what that person's saying, and to explore that.
Mm. I spent a number of years attending 12-step meetings to help me recover from my multiple addictions. And I remember one of the phrases that I used to hear all the time was, I really identify with that. I identify with that. And after a while, I started to notice, Ebony, that it became a bit constricting. In the beginning, it felt really liberating that, like, people would identify with each other. But then I sort of thought, well, am I always identifying from my own experience instead of actually trying to walk a mile in that person's shoes, which is what you were just talking about, Nige? Mm. So I feel like it's definitely something on the masters that I'm doing at the moment. We talk a lot about these two positions. So do you notice how I got that one out? Oh, I'm an adult. I'm doing a masters. yeah, I love it.
Adulting at the Tavistock.
But they talk about these two positions, and they're not phases and they're not stages. They literally are perspectives or points of view. And we go back and forth between them. And one of them is called the paranoid schizoid, where essentially you do get paranoid and you think the world is out to get you, and you do get schizoid. You do kind of go into that kind of crazy, like, oh, everything's black and white. And so communication in that place is very immature, and it's all about me. And it's really hard to actually hear the other person and actually get underneath what somebody else is going through and what they're really saying. And then we move from that into the more mature depressive position, which is not about being depressed. It's actually about that integration and kind of understanding that the world is far more than just black or white, that there's like more than 50 shades of grey. Excuse the terrible pun. So, yeah, I don't think there's any, like, there's so many different styles, aren't there? There's like the Marshall Rosenberg stuff about always speaking from the I position. Mm. I mean, in our marriage, we have made so many mistakes. I've made mistakes with coaching clients, in my family. And I think one of the things I really appreciate about communication is that you always get a chance to kind of do it again the next moment or the next day. That even if you make the most huge mess up, fuck up, it's like actually life keeps offering us another opportunity to have another go. So, yeah, I consider myself a real beginner actually in learning how to master it. And on my I'm going to say one more thing and then I'll shut up, but on my podcast I often find myself feeling really tongue-tied when I'm interviewing people. Like, I can't find my words and I don't know how to be me, even on this show that I've created, I've initiated, I've chosen the guest, I've written the questions. And even there I sort of think, how do I be human? How do I actually say what I want to say? It's definitely, yeah, it continues to elude me, basically, is what I'm saying.
And I think it's okay to make mistakes as well. You know, at the end of the day, it's a bit like a dance, isn't it, really? And sometimes it's like a tango, and other times it's more like a clumsy kind of, what would you call it? Like a, what's a really clunky dance? It's more like a born dance.
I also think it's about attitude, right? So we can learn all these techniques and we can be dancing the tango or the barn dance, but it also depends on the attitude that we come in on. So if you come in like, I'm going to curiously and playfully barn dance, or I'm going to curiously and playfully tango, it's very different from like coming in quite defensive or a little bit wounded and being like, I've got to get this right. Oh my god, fuck, everyone's looking at me. And for me, that's the absolute difference between a successful communication process and one that isn't, is how wounded in that moment I'm feeling and how necessary it is for me to win
or to be right. Yeah
and exactly that. It's like, and like, I hate to admit it, but a lot of the time I want to be right. Like, I just want to win. I don't care about you. And I have to backtrack from that, because I do. I really care. But if I'm not careful, because I've got a louder voice and a stronger opinion, often, not always by any stretch of the imagination, but often, like, I forget that I might accidentally be railroading someone. And so, like, for me also, communicating, I've gone off on a tangent, but I was at a dinner party the other day, and one of my friend's husband left the room in the middle of a conversation. He just left the room. I was like, what happened? And she went, yeah, we've got into the conversing bit of the evening. He doesn't do that. I was like, but that's the whole point. Like, to me, it's an art and a playful thing. And I've got no need in that circumstance to be right. I just want to talk. But he feels like we're going to be too clever or outdo him, or like it's going to go wrong in some way. And so it's easier to leave. And I just found that really fascinating and really interesting.
I can really relate to that. It's only in recent years that I have found myself being more confident. So my kind of default setting is to be the shy one and really read the situation and do a lot of, yeah, I know. You know, have you heard of blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, yeah, I think that name rings a bell. And I'm just sitting there going, I've never heard of this musician or poet or whoever it is. So I definitely relate to being more in his position, and it can be really painful and really tough. And the thing is that act of leaving the room is a communication in itself. I think we have to remember it's not just verbal and it's not just about language. You know, we're communicating all the time with everything that we do. So,
yeah, I agree.
And as it teaches in A Course in Miracles, you know, we're either teaching fear from fear or we're teaching from love. And we can't be in both places at the same time. So, kind of narrows it down a little bit, doesn't it? And in your case, Ebony, after what you just shared, you know, there's a line in the course about, you know, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? So.
No, I love that. And that's one of the things, you know, that I talk a lot in my work about that line. And I talk a lot about how for so many years people used to say that to me, and I'd be like, what are you talking about? No, I don't, it's not a fucking choice, and I want both. Like, my answer is both. And now I really spend so much of my time working with my clients on trying to see what it really means, like letting go of being attached to an outcome, letting go of the need for it to be like that, and being much more in that place of playfulness. And for me, playfulness is curiosity. It is like just being okay with whatever comes. And I feel like that's how we can have this conversation. Like, I wasn't ready to do a podcast because it needed to be good, and now I'm like, I'm doing the first episode, it's like it might not be good, okay, I'm just gonna do it anyway because I want to have fun with it and I want to talk to you guys and not have to be right or clever or perfect or brilliant or, you know, any of those things.
I mean, I think that right and clever and all that stuff is great if you're trying to tune into the Harvard Business Review podcast, right? But actually, I want to tune into Ebony's podcast to hear about wild and true, not good and clever. Like, that isn't why I would want to come to you. And I have to remember that about my own stuff is, like, what's behind this? It's a desire to be authentic or to be in integrity or to be vulnerable or to connect on a really deep level. And so I like what you said about the intention behind the communication. That really sets the whole thing up, and it means you can make mistakes and get it wrong, and actually that heart and that intention will come through.
I found it really difficult at first when we wrote the book and suddenly we're out in the world having to talk about this stuff. And I went through hell for a while. Firstly, I always had this fear running that I wasn't clever enough or educated enough, and that there were always people out there who knew a lot more than I did. And I think it was only when I really got it one day, I was sat there and I was really in it, and I thought, I don't think I can keep doing this. And then I realized that, you know, I just have to keep it simple to make A Course in Miracles the foundation of everything. So it doesn't, you know, from where I come from as kind of the foundation. And so it doesn't then matter what you're speaking about if it's within that frame. Yeah. And I found it really, really helped me start to communicate the message in a way that worked better for me, and hopefully that people could understand.
But it's so interesting, isn't it, Nigel, that when you started to do that, the number of Instagram followers went up and the amount of engagement went up. It was like the people that were supposed to resonate with you, the people who could hear your language and go, yes, that guy's talking my language, they started to actually flock to you. And it only happened when you started saying, I'm just going to be myself.
And I think as well, part of that was the having fun as well. Mm. And then one of the things I really loved, you know, I grew up with, I mean, everybody grows up with comedy, but I was watching Laurel and Hardy at 6 years old, and I love... one of the things I've really reclaimed in myself is allowing myself to have fun. So, you know, the message is important. You know, some we still have a message to communicate, but at the same time, what's so wrong with having a bit of a laugh while you're communicating that message?
I agree so much. And actually, there's two things that makes me want to ask you about. So one is, I was at Bristol TEDx a little while ago, and I saw one of the speakers, and she wanted to talk about something very, very serious that could be really boring and also could be quite shamey. And she did it in such a way that I left feeling so energized, so clear on her message, and so ready to go and act on this thing she wanted us to talk about. And she did it by using parody, using comedy, keeping her message really, really simple and to the point. And actually, what you're talking about is what they do in media training. They're like, what is your core story? What is the, like, because if you have like one core story that you're telling or one basis that you're talking about, then you can have fun with it. Like, actually having structure gives us space to enjoy it.
Mm.
And then the thing I wanted to link into was, are we allowed to talk about your TED talk yet? And how did it go?
Well, not the TED.
Funnily enough, as you were describing this woman's amazing sounding TED talk, I was thinking, no, we didn't really do any of that, did we?
I think we did. We did our best.
Can I share the opening line that we ended up cutting?
You can.
So we were going to open with Nige saying, or me saying, just before we begin, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a lost property announcement. Nige, go for it. What's the announcement?
Has anybody seen a testicle lying around?
Because I've lost one.
And why did you not go with that?
We decided not to go with the lost property line. We dropped it at the last minute for some reason.
I don't think the room was ready to hear that line. It was quite an interesting audience because we were really the only like non-science talk of the day.
Okay.
And the thing with our TED talk is that I suppose it would go into the sort of the passionate variety, and there were a couple of jokes in there. I made a joke about we talked about like the impact of this kind of silencing of boys' emotions, and then I put a slide in of a poodle with a really like dodgy haircut, and we talked about how in the 80s Nige had all these awful haircuts done, and I was like, here's the photographic evidence.
What do you mean all these?
Sorry. Oh, you had a perm.
I said one, not all. You're trying to tell me.
All 80s haircuts are terrible, aren't they?
Fun. It was the anxiety got so bad for me that I had a perm, and I look like a cross between like Michael Bolton and some kind of King Charles Spaniel.
People used to think I'd had a perm without having had a perm. My hair used to do that when I was a kid.
Did it? So you'd have been all right in the 80s, yeah?
Like, sort of.
Yeah.
But you know, the TEDx was, it wasn't, it was perfect expression.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. I mean, a few times Elle had to prompt me. I was actually overcoming stage fright. I'd never had it before, and I got stage fright in my last play I was in, and I was still kind of right in the middle of it. So this was the first time since I performed in Wait Until Dark where the first scene on the opening night went horribly wrong for me, and then I ended up with this almost PTSD, like this terror of going back on stage, and then all of a sudden the next thing I'm facing is an audience at a TEDx delivering an 18-minute talk that's been rehearsed. And that fear came up at different times, but I just thought after, you know, this is where I'm at. I've got to be kind to myself in the middle of this. And I mean, the feedback came in, didn't it, after, and they said there was some really good feedback saying some people really thought it was the highlight of the TEDx. I don't know whether I'll watch it when it comes out.
Yeah, it's one of those weird ones. We're still waiting for it to go live on YouTube. It takes a lot longer than you think it's going to take.
Mm.
We did go over time as well. So it's one of those, like, I don't know what that means, that that we didn't when we rehearsed, but I think just the mixture of anxiety and a little bit of losing in the odd line here or there, and I completely cocked a line up because Nige...
Oh, this was brilliant.
Well, I prompted Nige twice with right in the very beginning with like lines he'd forgotten, and I was like... schoolyard headmaster, and then I decided to just say the next line, but instead of saying that losing a testicle was obviously fairly unique, I said, but the thing is, Nige, losing a testicle wasn't very unique, was it? And then I went, well, oh god. Well, the whole point of the point, I got it completely the wrong way around, and I was like, I felt a bit like a deer in headlights. It was a really, for me, I think the lesson I took from it was really about letting go of the outcome of what you think something is for. For me, in my mind, the TEDx, it's like, you're going to be, this is the platform. This is going to be how this message reaches the masses. And actually, it was a lesson in humility and humor and supporting myself and really realizing that I'm not very stress resilient. I don't cope very well with stress, so yeah, loads of great juicy lessons.
I mean, the other thing as well is, you know, that I'm used to when I act, I'm a big fan of the method, and so I do a lot of prep, and we were invited in, and rather than sitting us at the back of the room, they sat us at the front. So we were just sitting there, like we were like sitting ducks at the front of the room while like somebody got up and there was like, right, you're fifth on. And then they said, we're having a break. And then there were two more to go. And then suddenly we were up. They moved us forward. So for me, there was nowhere to actually prepare. There was no way of just having that moment to move your body and to just what they say in the method, free up the instrument. You know, I felt very tense, and I've a funny feeling that might show in the TEDx, but I think it kind of, it might possibly work with the message as well. And it is what it is, and people will either like it or they won't.
Well, I am genuinely really excited to support you in it by watching it and listening to it and hearing and being able to have an instrument by which to share more of this message and all the rest of it. And so on the website and the show notes that go with this, we'll put all the links to everything, so let people know where they can find it if it's come through by then, but definitely where they can find you and the book and all of those other things. We have been doing this thing where, because some of what we talk about here is a bit dry and a bit serious and a bit heavy and all the rest, we haven't had so much of that today, but just in case, we do this thing where we say, I am an adult, but it's like a mini confession. So I will go first, and then one of you can choose now. Who's going to go first?
You.
Okay, I'll go first.
Excellent. Then I will do a second one, then it's your go, Nige. Cool.
Okay, you're going to do say again. Well, whatever.
You're last. You'll figure it out, I promise.
I'm last. Okay, yeah. I got it.
So I am an adult, but sometimes I don't want to be reasonable or rational or listen. I just want to look at you in the face, not you personally, and say, no, you're stupid, and leave.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. I am an adult, but I really wish that I still had those plastic high heels that I had when I was 5 years old that I got, I think, from the front of a magazine, clopped around. I really miss them. And I saw a little girl yesterday in a gold gown in a coffee shop. And I so want to dress like that in my day-to-day life.
You absolutely should.
I should, even though I'm an adult.
Okay, so my second one. I am an adult, but I do my best shopping at 2 a.m. from my iPhone, either through Instagram or Facebook ads. Genuinely, I was at a conference the other day and someone said to me, that dress is amazing, where is it from? And I was like, I don't know, just arrived at my door. I think I bought it at 1 a.m. on Instagram. No memory of shopping in the middle of the night at all.
It's dangerous.
Oh, really?
Clearly it works, though.
I was happy with it. Nige, your go.
Is it? Okay. Oh, I just need to limber up a bit. I'm getting a bit hot now. Honestly, I know it's getting close to the bone when the heat starts building up. It's about 300 degrees in here.
Okay. Get on with it.
All right, I will, yeah. I'm doing it now. I'm coming to it. All right. Well, I am an adult, but sometimes I just want to sit and download music. I mean, like recently I got a book called 1001 Albums to Listen to Before You Die. And I thought, well, given that I'm still alive, I'll see which ones I've got, and whatever I haven't got, then I'll get them and hopefully listen to them before I die. And you know what happened? Listen to this though. A few months ago, my computer blew screened. And I went in and I bought this new laptop, and I said, she goes, this one's got lots of memory on it. It'd be fantastic for you. I said, well, I'm a DJ. I said, and I have quite a lot of music. So I took it up home and I put nothing else on it. I just put the music on just for starters. And then this box came up. It said, sorry, you haven't got enough memory. So I thought, what the hell's that? So I went back to the shop. I said, you told me this thing had a load of memory on it. And she opened it up. She went, I don't understand it. And then she opened it up. She went, are you for real? I said, why? She said, you've got 58,000 music tracks. Oh, I said, shit, it's 1001 albums. Yeah.
So anyway, the whole house has been well educated in that regard.
It's been fantastic, though.
Yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant.
It's been really, really an eye-opener and an ear-opener.
So, Elf, send me the highlights. I don't need 1001 albums, but the odd track here or there would be great.
Yes.
Thank you for being on with me and talking about being an adult. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. And for people listening, do you want to just share where people can find you?
I always say this, Niggas, why did you say that? I always say breakthevow.com.
Yeah, it's the right place to find out about the book.
Yeah.
Why would I say what
you... Do you know, for the longest time, I didn't know what to say when people... I'm like, oh, God, what did I say? Breakthevow.com. We've got a landing page at the moment.
And also, check out the Wide Awake Show.
Wide Awake Show.
That's going to sound lovely.
It's the Wide Awake Show.
I'm going to apologise to John. Sorry, John. you can apologise too. Thanks.
Yeah, listen to it. Come on.
All right, we will.
You better do, or you're going to get it.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you so much for all of your support. Please keep listening, liking, rating, sharing, so that more people can come and enjoy and engage with us. Really, thank you. I'll see you next time.